Welcome to Fresh Meat, a freewheeling podcast from Manifest Group, where we bring together some of the best creative minds around the freshest topics in the industry. Expect a healthy dose of insight, innovation, and inspiration. And if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe. And if you're feeling a bit cheeky, why not give us a rating too? Today, I'm in our Stockholm studio with Rasmus Adler Wahlberg, a serial entrepreneur who founded his first business at the age of 22, Advisa, before moving on to exiting that business and starting a new company called Fitness Collection, which was a holistic fitness subscription, which he also exited, and now runs a fantastic AI-fueled business called Multiply, which helps you automate repetitive work in less than 30 seconds. And we're going to talk today about artificial intelligence in a sense of whether it's ever going to become artificial imagination. So welcome to the studio today, Rasmus.
Thanks a lot, Alex. And for those who want to check it out, you can check out Multiply at multiply.co. But yeah, really good to be here.
So one thing that I wanted to do is have a podcast, an episode of Fresh Meat around AI. And I thought, this is a new idea. No one's done this before, right? So then I looked on Spotify, and I would say it's the number one subject across every single industry at the moment is artificial intelligence. But my frustration was it was all kind of the scientific debate. It was all, I guess, talking about how artificial intelligence is going to change our lives, whether we like it or not, how artificial intelligence works, the risks artificial intelligence poses, regulation, and all of, I guess, the important stuff that clever people talk about on podcasts. Now, in the absence of a clever person hosting this, I'm much more interested, I guess, in the bigger principle of why we're interested in artificial intelligence. So that's why I brought Rasmus onto the show, because from an entrepreneurial brain, Rasmus is the person who's kind of harnessing the potential of artificial intelligence for a number of different stakeholder groups, right? Number of different industries. And I thought it'd be really interesting to just, let's reset back the discussion around, okay, why AI? What's the opportunity that that brings to us broadly? And then how AI? Maybe that's how we cover it. But mostly, let's be optimistic about things. I don't know about you, Rasmus, but that, from my point of view, is a good place to start.
Sure. I mean, I'm definitely optimistic, right? And I mean, I wouldn't call myself an expert, but I'd say I'm pretty well-versed in applied AI and with enough understanding of, I guess, how it works to see the opportunities and discuss them. But I mean, just to go to your first question, why AI? I mean, from my point of view, it's same thing with other tools. It's just a tool in that sense. It's, and to take the example of the computer, it's to do more, to create more, to be able to do more individually and together, and do more of what we want and less of what we don't want. So I mean, just to sort of give an, I guess, a short intro to Multiply, it's like what we do is make it very easy to automate repetitive work. And then AI is, of course, a new way to do that on top of all the other kind of interfaces we offer. And I can give examples and stuff, but like that's for me, it's just like very basic human kind of motivation to be able to do things in our lives and achieve more. And by doing that, growing as people. So I think it's like very basic, like it's nothing new. AI is just like, it's you know, you can frame it in different ways, but it's either a new type of computer, a new type of interface, a new type of internet. We can frame this in any way. But yeah, I think the basic motivations are the same. There's nothing new here.
And I think that's really interesting from your point of view now with your latest venture. So Rasmus is the founder and CEO of Multiply, which is a platform that brings together all kinds of AI technologies to make, I guess, the application of AI easier in day-to-day life. But the name Multiply as well, this idea that, you know, you mentioned we can do more. I think there's probably an argument for doing less, but actually getting more out of it as well, maybe. But Multiply, tell us more about where the idea came from. Like, what made you decide AI was the next opportunity then, based on what you just said?
I mean, the short answer is that we were quite early in seeing the capabilities of these new models, you know, especially when GPT-3 came out, which was not when, you know, really it caught the mainstream. You know, ChatGPT was the mainstream. We can talk about that. But when you could see that, you know, these models have the ability to understand the underlying principles of the data it's trained on. So it actually has intelligence, you know, in a very like broad sense, in my opinion. And that means that it can do a lot of things that we now do. For example, you know, one of the most common, I guess, examples that were the earliest to reach the mainstream is, you know, writing content online. So saying, hey, I want to read about how, or I want to write about how AI will affect the medical field. Then it will literally be trained on a lot of data and can write something relatively good. And I mean, now we're not as impressed, but when it came out, you know, it was very, very like unexpectedly impressive, the quality it could produce. So that's sort of where we started, just like seeing that, hey, most of the things we do on a computer are now actually possible for these new models to do. And that became even more so with GPT-4, etc. So that's where it started. And then it sort of started with, I guess, our base motivation for Multiply, because we were going a little bit before then. It's just like there's so much stuff we do on a daily basis that we wouldn't actually want to spend the time on. And that sort of steals the time from the things we want to spend time on. So I think it's, on just on what you said, it's like doing less of what we would rather not do and do, and being able to achieve more of what we want to achieve, and also spend more time on where we really feel that we add ourselves to it, you know. So, I mean, an example is like, let's say you write a book, right? And you do that. I mean, you could do it in ChatGPT, there are examples of that, or you could, you know, do it in Multiply. And just getting that first draft of having an idea, having like that collaborative partner in terms of the AI to sort of get that first draft out, and then you edit it and you make sure it, you know, follows your idea and you iterate with AI, etc. So then what I would say is that if you're the kind of person who don't enjoy typing for typing's sake, making the perfect phrase, coming up with from the start, you know, that, I guess, that craft of it, but you enjoy the idea of it, shaping the story and making sure that it really captures what you want to communicate, then I'd say that's an example of you doing less of what you'd rather spend less time on and more of what you want to spend time on. But that's an assumption in this part, but an assumption that seems to be proven, you know, true across many fields.
And I think that's actually the crux of one of the challenges to something like Multiply that the creative industries might have, for instance. So John Hegarty, one of the founders of BBH, often talks about creativity in two fields. And I'm sorry, John, if I get the exact wording incorrect, but there's kind of pure creativity and applied creativity. So almost applied creativity is, for instance, the ability to paint. Pure creativity is deciding what to paint. And I feel like at the moment, artificial intelligence anyway, is very much that applied creativity, for instance, and supporting and accelerating and catalyzing that. How close do you think we are to artificial intelligence becoming artificial imagination? You know, is that something that is a realistic outcome of this technological development? Because I know obviously IQ and processing, intellectual processing is 10x, I think, every time, every new iteration of ChatGPT, for instance. But I don't know, with creativity, it's a little bit different. Is that easier to model or more difficult? I'm not sure.
I mean, I think that we have, I mean, maybe better and more clear definitions of intelligence than of creativity. But if I would offer two different ways of looking at creativity that are sort of discussed, one of them is using information and combining it. And so that's, for example, saying that actually your creativity as in your job is all the experience you have and your ability to combine it in new and novel ways. AI is already there. It can do it extremely well. Then there's kind of the classic definition of creativity, which is that you have a muse or a genius hovering over your shoulder, and that comes from somewhere else. So that sort of, with that distinction, it's a little bit, actually it's a little bit the same with intelligence, is it becomes the same question as of consciousness. Can these machines be creative / conscious in essence? And that's a very, very hard and deeply philosophical question. But I'd say for the purposes of output, you know, creative output, I'd say we're already there. You can really like have these AI models produce amazing music across many genres, or like amazing prose, amazing artistry, like visual artistry. You know, it's going to be there with videos. And you could say, hey, that's still not creativity. The person who writes the prompt that instructs, that says what to do, is the creator. And I mean, I can definitely agree with that in many ways, which is why also I think that, you know, there's definitely a role for us as humans working with AI. But I mean, there's a funny saying that AI is anything, you know, the computer can't do yet. And this is like one more step of the way. You could argue that if you take these new kind of, I mean, we can go into that, but like agents, like giving autonomy to the systems, you could argue that if you give them that decision-making capability, they are creative within that. So I think for practical purposes, I'd say these models are already able to be purely creative according to the first definition I gave.
Okay.
And according to the second definition, it is pretty much impossible to say. It's like the, you know, yeah. I mean, that's like a more philosophical argument around consciousness.
There's a lot of philosophy I find creeps in, right? And I think that's why it's captured the imagination of everyone so acutely. Yes, of course, it's an accelerating functionality, right, that's coming from the various AI tools that exist. And certainly visual AI, for instance, I think is an area of artificial intelligence people maybe didn't expect. ChatGPT feels like very much what, you know, Steven Spielberg expected AI to become. I think that idea that, you know, creation can happen across all media is fascinating. But philosophically, something that I find interesting is that, like you mentioned, who's the creator? You know, the person who writes the prompt, and at what point does the artificial intelligence start writing their own prompts? But also, that's not how intelligence, or certainly how imagination, works, because instinct exists before cognition. So as soon as you put thoughts into words, that's actually an articulation of your instinct. And there's so much of the human experience that exists before you think it, that how that can be replicated, that's, I guess, the bit that everyone finds dangerous. This idea, okay, well, can AI interfaces become effectively a replicant of a human experience?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a big philosophical question that we're not going to necessarily answer today, but you know what I mean? Like, from your point of view, does that matter?
I mean, I definitely think it matters on like on a philosophical level and on a personal level. And it is going to matter on a societal level, because at one point in the future, you will be at the sci-fi stage of like evaluating whether these models should be afforded personhood. You know, are they conscious, or are they, you know, people, so to say? Are they beings? But I don't think we're there yet. Definitely not. So that would be an answer to, like, I don't think we are beyond the stage where the AI is a tool. I don't think we are at all. And there's like, we can dive into that. But there are going to be like very interesting, like, just tying back to what you said. So instinct before cognition, was that what you said?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So then the question there becomes, diving into it, like, where does that instinct come from? Does it come from your environment?
Yeah.
You know, is it actually based on the sensory input now and before? And then once we have, you know, Tesla's Optimus walking around with these new like multimodal models, which can interpret both, you know, different types of medium, just not only text, but like images as well. So it can understand images, for example. It can understand what it sees. That's going to be in like Meta's AI glasses now as well. Well, then you have an AI that can walk around, explore, make decisions based on sensory input, understand them, make decisions, and come up with, I guess, creative intuition. No, you said, did you say intuition before? Yeah.
Yeah.
So like creative intuition from that, potentially. It's very hard to say now, but like it really will come down to like, like, how does this work? Like, how does this human experience work? And where is intuition? Where is creativity? And I don't think these will be like religious questions. I don't think we'll end up with firm answers, but we'll end up with different perspectives on the question.
I think that's where the optimists like myself, and no doubt you, Rasmus, as well, like, that's where it's fascinating, right? This kind of relentless pursuit of progress. There's an aspect of humanity we're going to understand through this technology that people are potentially scared to see. You know, all the things in the world we don't understand are probably going to be revealed by artificial intelligence before they're now revealed by humans, right? In the sense of how we work as well. But now I've realized we've gone into this kind of cloud of philosophical discussion that everyone does, right? So I'd like us to focus more now on Multiply, what you guys are doing. but also, I guess, to the business world and the creative industries. What can we do now with artificial intelligence that isn't just a case of producing some nice images for a PowerPoint on Midjourney, right? Like, what's the potential for us to create better businesses and better creative teams using something like Multiply, you know, right now? We're not talking in 12 months. We're not talking with the next version of GPT or when everyone knows how to write prompts. What's the role of entrepreneurs like yourself in taking AI and applying it, I guess, to the world around us?
Sure. I mean, I think it goes back to what I said in the beginning when I intro this. From my point of view, these new models, even if we don't have any new breakthroughs, they can still do pretty much everything, maybe everything, a person at a computer can do better, faster, and cheaper. This is also paraphrasing Sam Altman of OpenAI, but like I think it really captures it. That's really my observation. So then the role of people like myself and you know, a lot of the, I guess, the AI boom now on the application layer is, how do I make those capabilities available in an easy manner for people to do less of what they don't want and more of what they want? And just to be very concrete, there's on the level of you saying, telling the AI, hey, I have, you know, this brand voice of my client, if I take your field, I have this type of content I want to produce. These are my ideas or these are my requirements. And then asking the AI to do the first draft of it. And at the point now, very few people allow the AI to, you know, just publish it, for example, you know, through a website or social media or wherever you're going to use that content without checking it. So I think like it's really in that idea generation and first draft creation stage where people really find value in it. And of course, where we come in, I guess, and where, you know, I guess ChatGPT is the first start of it, is it's a little bit like, you know, the first terminals on a computer where you like tell the AI exactly what to do now, and then if it gives you an output, and then you tell it to do something else, etc. And of course, what we're trying to do is take that bit further, because that's still just an assistant. So take that on the kind of axis towards more autonomy, where, you know, you can hand off bigger and bigger chunks of works, and in the end, hand off full role descriptions, you know, so that you basically have your team of, you know, I mean, say you're a social media manager, right? And you have then this AI being, or in essence, like a bunch of social media managers working for you in the forms of AI that work for the different clients, and you step up a level and edit the output of these. And maybe, you know, direct them in terms of what type of content to produce or with ideas, etc. So I think it's really, at this stage, it's just like, you know, it's hypercharging your own productivity. And the thing I think is like worth a takeaway is a lot of the things you think you can't, like these models can't do, they can do. That's like my experience, at least in trying things. And then there's work to make that good and make that work well in a workflow for yourself, which is where, you know, the application layer comes in. But it is quite amazing in terms of like what they can actually create good quality output and unique output. If you just feed it the right input, you set up the right kind of frame for them to build things.
I think it's interesting what you said, that, you know, what people think these models can't do, they can. I think in my role, for instance, from a creative standpoint, aside from the side hustle that is being the CEO, largely lead on strategy for brand work. And I think there's a lot of strategists think that there's a purity to the process, which there absolutely is. But there's also intellectual administration, right? So a good example, pulling together, you know, all of the data and then finding the insight within that. You can use, you know, your own system, your own processes of finding the insight, your own criteria for insight as the prompt within Multiply to find the themes, right? To find, okay, well, here's the three key, I don't know, personality traits from audience data that are relevant to your product ambition, for instance. Now, that, you know, a strategist can either see that as a threat, like, hang on, that's doing part of the job that I used to do, or see actually that that's the part of the job that anyone could do with the right mechanical training to some extent, right? And I can do more strategy work because that strategic administration is done. But I would have never guessed that that was a function of AI. I would have, you know, like you said, the automation aspect, the kind of workflow automation, the even more mechanical aspects of content production, I kind of understood AI could do. But I think there's a lot of challenge in the creative sector and in everywhere else that, well, this is going to take our jobs. You know, no one will have to learn how to pull insight out of data because a machine will do it. Do you think that's a problem? Do you think that's something that we need to learn, or is that something now that will always be just done by machines?
No, I mean, I think that's the same fear as every, I mean, this is very typical AI podcast content, by the way,
but it's
funny because, like, I really think it's worth repeating. It's like every, like, major technological cycle with the computer, with the internet, etc. It's a lot like with the farms, it's like taking jobs. And that is true in one sense. Jobs disappear, but new ones emerge.
Totally,
and the ones
that
emerge can create a lot more. So just to take your very concrete example of strategy work, I mean, as a strategist, do you feel that the main value you add is looking through all these, you know, I don't know, customer interviews and distilling what's the important data, and then applying whatever your favorite strategic framework is, you know, I don't know, the double diamond something, you know, where you go through a process. You
can, I'm interested really, in this double diamond. Yeah, I'm going to be patenting that when I leave this building.
Okay.
So.
No, there is one actually. But anyhow, it's like a product management technique. Or is your value add in the actual kind of, on top of that, doing the thinking, doing the iteration with the client, having the discussions, like realizing which data is missing, or, you know, looking at the contradictions that AI found in the data and making sure to get more interviews and making decisions off that data. So there's always this level on top. If it's a little bit like, what is a good example? I mean, I guess, yeah, Photoshop. I think when Photoshop came, there was a lot of, I think within the photography field and within, you know, visual artists in different ways that were like, yeah, I mean, this is not real art. This is going to take our jobs, etc. But then it just ended up that, you know, the people who were creating could do a lot more and they could do new things.
I mean, that's the same with digital photography, right? I think every single, I wrote a piece for Slant, which is the Manifest magazine, and on this kind of, let's not forget the optimism side of things. And every single technological advancement, especially significant ones, has been met with a mixture of paranoia and fear. So whether that be the printing press, whether that be digital photography, the smartphone, downloadable music. And what's interesting is for me that it's not even totally replaced the traditional way of doing things in any of those fields, right?
Yeah.
What it's done, though, is create those as crafts that are expressions of humanity, if you like. So, you know, vinyl music is having a huge resurgence in a digital era where, you know, the mainstream consumption of music is through streaming. But vinyl now exists in a different format, more of a human, tactile format, I guess. And people use it differently than when it was the mainstream form of consuming music, right? And I think the same can be said of all the processes that are automated through AI. It doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be gone forever from humans doing it, but that humans doing it will have a different value and a different kind of sensibility too. But like you said, my view is that progress is, you know, all of those advancements have been met with that paranoia and fear, and all technology has a light and a dark side, but that tends to be the light and dark side of the humans using the technology rather than the tech itself. Out of the box, technology is objective. But once you apply a human being to it, then that's when it starts to sway one way or the other. And I think, you know, we have to be optimistic and we have to jump in with both feet, because if we don't, the bad guys will. And they'll define what the technology is, you know, and that happens far too frequently, I guess. But now we're definitely in that going down those tracks of just what everyone else talks about. But some of the difficult questions, I guess, if you're an entrepreneur in this field, will be more around looking at how technologies have sometimes not quite reached their pinnacle, right? And feel like much more of a bubble, but perhaps will just resurge. So I remember podcasts were a bubble and then disappeared. And now everyone consumes podcasts on a daily basis. Not technology, more media, obviously. But thinking like blockchain and Web3 being defined by the cryptocurrency bubble, right? So there's still a future for blockchain and Web3, but it exists beyond that initial crypto surge. Do you think there's a risk that there's an artificial intelligence bubble, especially with all of the investment going into these early stage businesses that are perhaps before, like you said, they're arriving before the AI is capable in some areas? And do you feel there's a risk there for the industry to maybe misdefine itself and be seen as, okay, well, that failed, that big AI experiment failed?
So I think, I mean, answering that and going back to like the previous thing with just responding to what you said around the jobs, I think that the way I view it is the capabilities are here, and whoever doesn't, you know, like everyone will start adopting these. Just they just, like, there were people holding out and using the computer and the internet, but you know, that soon became ridiculous because you weren't as productive as the other people you were competing with. So there's like a natural drive for that within every industry. So then the question becomes, are these capabilities real? From my point of view, they are for a lot of things. However, of course, they're like, you know, there's going to be overinvestment. Anytime there's a new technology, there is overinvestment. But, and then there's like, you know, the classic kind of hype cycle where you have, you know, the hype, and then you have the disillusionment, and then you have the, you know, kind of, I guess, steady progress from there. And of course, that's happening. But I think it's been proven that across many use cases for many people, it's already super valuable. So I think it's pretty simple like that. And I'm not like worried about like the hype cycle or anything like that, because that hasn't stopped progress in the past. It's more about just making sure that, I mean, from my point of view, it's just creating value. It's like any other technology. That's why, like, I think AI will be the quickest thing to go from front kind of page, front web page, like we do this with AI, to not being there. I think previously it was, you know, cloud, and it's been like all of these things, you know, .com and the .com bubble. You like really make sure that people understand that this is an internet thing. And this, now we're doing that with AI, and we do it a little bit as well, because at this stage it makes sense. But I think AI will be, you know, so embedded so quickly across all the existing tools and with a lot of new applications and in all professions, that it will very, very quickly be an assumption. You know, Jake, I'll ask that back to you. But like, from what I've understood about, you know, your profession, is that right now, you know, people are a little bit wary about, you know, talking with clients about using AI, because then like, what's our value? But I think that's a very initial fear. And, you know, if you get like better results for your clients, they don't care about how you do it. And they will soon go to expecting, you know, maybe that you don't do scan through 100 customer interviews yourself without using technology to do it, because they start understanding that technology, like that AI is better at it, potentially. But I don't know, what are you seeing in your meetings?
That's a really interesting comment on the division of potential and application. Is what's AI better than humans at, right? And that's fine. Like, I don't find that a scary phrase, right? But I think some people are afraid of that. But like you just said, if you're looking at media monitoring across, I don't know, 30 different territories to find the key media themes or narratives around a specific subject, firstly, that's a lot of work. But secondly, a machine can do that in an instant and better. You know, they can read every single word, right, and take it all in. That's impossible. So there are new creative heights you can reach when you have access to that data at the speed at which it's delivered through AI. And anyone that therefore doesn't embrace these new technologies in our industry, I think, is underselling their clients, but underselling the work, which is what we're all here to produce, right? The work can get better. The work can get bigger. The work can be, to use your phrase, multiplied, right, by the technology that you're able to adopt. And I think one of the big skill sets from a consultancy is being able to harness potential for clients. So it's not about return on investment. That's an output, right? That is something, or an outcome, sorry. That is something that should happen from you producing better work. But really, you should just be relentless in pursuit of what makes the work better. And if a machine does the job better, use the machine. If the machine's the same as a human, there's a question to be asked there. But then it's the relationship, you know, it's what's going to produce the best possible work is never really going to be machine without human, in my view, because that's where I think there is this question mark around artificial intelligence and artificial imagination. And that's what I'm excited to see and excited to pursue. But really, clients want someone who, or brands, they're looking for someone who can say, okay, well, what can we use AI for to help the work be better? Is a question you should be willing to answer. And much like with any technological innovation, it's kind of your job to be testing the water. You know, not my first boss, but one of my early bosses now works at Manifest, Sean Beaumont, and he's a fantastic kind of innovator in his field, right? And he's a designer, but he's not, he might be actually motivated by fear, right? That he might be replaced or become irrelevant, I guess. But he's not, he's the one who's adopting and embracing these technologies, and the work that he's producing through AI, especially in things that are hypothetical, you know, visualizations of big creative ideas. You can get people to buy a much bigger idea if they can see it first, but you can't spend that time 3D modeling that kind of creative activation. But Sean can deliver that through AI visual tools, and we can get that confidence, I guess, in the creative idea. I think 99% of great creative work, the job is actually selling it, you know, because it's so easy to say why an idea is not going to work. And AI can help you make, I guess, what people might call brave work. Nothing that we do is brave. We're marketers. Firemen are brave, like marketers are not. But work that's perceived to be brave, we can make feel safe with AI, for instance. So, like, I'm definitely over-talking this point, but this potential, that's the bit that I'm excited about. But that's also the expectation that our industry is going to have on it.
I think that, like, just to pick on the last point, on expectations and new heights. I think taking, you know, film production, let's take animated film as just an example. So it started with like Disney, right? And they literally drew every frame by hand. I'm not sure if they actually had 24 frames a second, but, you know, let's assume they had that. And then, you know, fast forward, I don't know, 50 years or whatever it is, 70 years to now. And the level expected out of an animated film is very different. And that's because of the tooling, right? So now the base level, kind of the lowest expectation of what an animated film should be, is now much, much higher in terms of just visual quality. And the height is also like the things like the best animated movies, the most impressive ones or most entertaining ones are also now completely different levels. So I think what happens with every new technological shift, you know, whether that's in, you know, animation technology or now with these new models, is it raises the expectation. So which means the lowest level of quality that works, that is acceptable by the market, that is enjoyable by consumers, etc. And it also gives the you know, the best people the ability to reach new heights. Like you said, with like now and like expert brand strategies can, you know, get good trend data on, you know, media across, you know, a segment in a completely different way and synthesize it and then come up with, hey, what's the way to make some noise here and really get through. So I really just think it's about that. It's nothing new in the sense of like, it's just another shift like that. And then this one is, of course, different. Like the previous ones have been different, but on a base level, it's just like, we're going to be able to do more, we're going to be able to do them better, and more people are going to be able to do them better. It's like a very democratizing thing. You know, we can really dive into that across other segments, you know, there are, you know, but yeah, just to sort of stop there. But I mean, if just from your point of view, like, I guess, what are you excited about with this? Like, what like actually, like, not on like, oh, this is good for the business, but like personal level, what is excited? Like, what excites you?
I'm excited by not knowing. So I'm excited by kind of fresh snow, right? That's kind of how I'm always, for me, that the shock of the new is what my business is about, right? Always trying to do, I'm not interested in doing the same thing over and over and getting better and better at it. Like, it's what's the next thing, the next chapter, what's the fresh snow to step into, right? And I think AI, the discussion that we've just had today, for instance, I mean, and I'll be honest, we've avoided talking about it and then we've said we can't not talk about it. But I think that it's such a huge nebulous realm of possibility. You know, we have to reinvent everything, right, around artificial intelligence, from regulation to copyright to, but we've had to do that before. And those shifts tend to come with incredible leaps of human potential. You know, I use the example of the printing press because yeah, we had to, you know, entire industries disappeared for a start. New industries emerged as well. But we were able to unlock, you know, the democratization of literacy. You know, like that's something that transformed the world. And I genuinely think this is probably the only technological advance that in my lifetime so far that has such a profound potential. And yeah, I'm the optimist in a room that believes humans will inevitably, the good will outweigh the bad in terms of how it's applied. But yeah, the exciting thing for me as a creative is the work, you know, bigger work that moves into realms you couldn't imagine. You know, one of the biggest limitations people will say in our industry is budgets and imagination. And artificial intelligence has an influence on both. You know, it's the fuel and it's the vehicle.
And I think that's like a really, like for me, like a really important point of why I'm optimistic. It's like, I mean, the internet means now that anyone can write and publish, pretty much anyone can write and publish a book. You know, there's self-publishing websites, there are ways to reach out. Same thing for artists across every field or creators. And now you will have, I mean, just take your example as a brand agency. I'm not saying it really exists now, but it's getting there and it's very close. And when I say like the capabilities now are there, it doesn't mean that all the apps are done, but it means the capability of these models are proven to produce high quality text, audio, visual, and soon, very soon, like getting video, 3D models are already happening, etc. So produce, edit, be creative with them. And then all of a sudden, a startup like ourselves could create good video content, like in the sense of like, you know, by talking to an AI, or, you know, when you're doing like the brand campaign, you know, for a client, then all of a sudden, the budget won't be the limiting factor, like you said. And I think that's just like an amazing democratization, which will, of course, lead to much more content. Again, a content explosion is already happening across the medium that AI is already very capable within. And that will lead to, you know, other issues like, you know, how do you get through that noise, and how do you as a consumer filter through all that, etc. There are a lot of these things that are sort of going to happen on top of that. But on the base layer, it really like is something that gives more people more ability to create. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, cool. So I would say that's all we've got time for today, because I could sit in this lovely podcast studio in Stockholm and chat to you all day. And we probably have done that in periods before, Rasmus. But just like to say to everyone listening, thank you for listening. Hopefully there's something there in that discussion that is at least a little diversion from the usual tropes around the discussion of AI. But super interested on what you guys think as well. So feel free to leave comments or reach out to us on Twitter at Manifest Group. And remember to subscribe to Spotify or Apple Music so you never miss an episode. As Julian would say, who's a much better host on these than I am, stay blessed and stay fresh. And we'll see you next time.